thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Now,
here's John Williams.
In three languages. That's right, we just got back from a long trip. Hi, it's John Williams. We visited three different places where three different languages are spoken, and I've decided English is my favorite, so we'll do the show in that. I'm back. Yes, this is John Williams. Thanks again, Pete McMurray, and thanks again, Patty Vasquez, for filling in for me for the last several days. Brenda and I led a trip on a cruise, a bunch of WGN radio listeners, and Brenda and I traveled from Barcelona to Rome on a cruise that was organized by one of our fine sponsors, Kelly Cruises. Visit kellycruises.com. Boy, they do put together some nice trips. We'll do another one next year. We'll cruise from Paris to Normandy and back on the River Seine. On the 75th anniversary of the storming of the beaches of Normandy, we will be there and cruising through wine country along the way, and then back to Paris with extra days on either end of the trip if you want to see the City of Light. So it was a really fun trip. It's really good to be back as well. One of the nice things, of course, when you travel, particularly out of country, is that it is not only easy, but when you're on a boat, almost imperative that you end up cutting yourself off from a lot of the news. So while we were able to sort of follow it, the anxiety that comes with following the news every day in America was not on the ship. A lot of nice people were, though. A lot of nice listeners. First stop was Barcelona. I'm not going to talk much about the trip. I will maybe a little more tomorrow because I know a lot of the people in the group will be getting back today and tomorrow, and they wanted to hear a little of the recap. But I will just tell you this. It's sometimes amazing to me how you can be sitting in your house early in the morning in Chicago and that afternoon be on a boat in the Mediterranean. You know, I mean, I think we sort of take for granted how easy transportation is. And so you and I will fuss about getting to the airport and getting through customs at O'Hare and a long flight and connections and all of that stuff. But really, within 24 hours, you can be from your living room to a boat on the Mediterranean.
And you're flying through the sky.
I know. And
over
that's,
an ocean.
I know. I literally, they have the one thing where it says your flight, so you can watch movies while you're in flight. Or you can follow data. And I follow the data. We're at 32,000 feet. We're traveling 600 miles an hour, actually about 520 miles an hour. The outside air temperature is 23 degrees below zero. And you're having a cocktail. That just never ceases to amaze me.
Yeah, that's, like it's nothing.
I know. It's like we're, and really, and then we have the audacity to say, well, those meals are really salty. You're eating a meal in space. Then we got to the hotel in Barcelona, and we stayed a night in Barcelona, which is a wonderful city. And again, ever so doable. They are so accommodating. They're so happy to have you there. We stayed one extra day in Barcelona, which, again, is just a really terrific town. Amazing architecture. It's the second biggest city in Spain. We got to a hotel called the Majestic.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
Who doesn't want to stay, especially if you think you're King John, who doesn't want to stay at a place called the Majestic? And on the front, it says 1918 to 2018. So it's the centennial of this hotel in a terrific location. And we checked in, and the staff there was so super accommodating, it was almost comical. You know, you walk in, and there's like four people who come up to you and say, what on earth do you need? We will just get it instantly. And there's a little bit of a language barrier, and so you say, we're checking in, and then suddenly people start talking, and conversations are happening left and right. You're not exactly sure what they're saying or who to say them to. And eventually they get you and your bags up to your room. One thing that is still a bit perplexing to me, on an all-inclusive cruise like we were in, or in cities in Europe generally, is the business of tipping. Because when the bellboy takes your bags up to your room, and they had five bags for me and Brenda, I like to travel with fancy clothes. So we have five bags that they bring up, and I think, well, I should tip the guy. And I did, but I have no clue how much. And then when you're at a restaurant, this is what I do. I think, okay. And you're, Steve, you know more about this than I do. You don't tip in restaurants in Europe, right?
No, not really.
Okay.
Not for the most part.
I know that, but I can't do that,
you
right?
You can't not tip?
I can't not. I'm an American, and I'm a 20 percenter. you know.
No way. So you tip 20% in Europe?
I don't. But I think, okay, but I'm not going to do that. So I should leave less. But then I find myself leaving like €2. Like we'll have a $70 dinner, a $100 dinner, and I leave a couple of euro, which seems so beside the point.
It seems insulting.
It does.
Right.
So I'm like, because if you're going to leave them two, leave them 10. Hell, leave them 20. Are you tipping or not? You can't be sort of tipping. You're either tipping or you're not.
Can I bring you a coffee now?
Boom.
And doesn't it feel, though, like since you are American, that they are looking at you like, well, you tip where you're from, so you should be tipping me.
I think that's what they think, even though I think they also know that I'm supposed to know that I shouldn't think that.
Right. It's a very complicated.
It totally
is. I've had people in Europe give me the tip back.
Have you? Really?
Yeah, like
how nice.
At a bar or something? Like, no.
How nice.
Because it's not how they're paid.
I know that. And so that's the thing. So when I leave a couple of euro, I think not only is it insulting, but it's sort of almost disrespectful of the culture. No, you idiot. You Americans.
So you just pretty much beat yourself up on travel,
don't
you?
Oh, my gosh. This is one of many little conundrums that I face. You know, what do I do? What do I say? How do I be? By the way, when we were in Barcelona, we were there on April 23rd. April 23rd is Valentine's Day in Spain. They have the most interesting cultural thing there. They're Valentine's. Here's how they do Valentine's Day. The boys get books and the girls get roses. And they said to us, we got in a day early, like the 22nd. They said, okay, tomorrow's the 23rd. It's Valentine's Day. The streets will be packed with pop-up kiosks selling books, tables, tents. It'll be like the biggest street fair you ever saw. And wherever you go, everybody will be buying books. Children's books, adult books, fiction books, all kinds of books. And then everywhere you go, people will be selling roses. And it'll be a great big festival celebration. And you give the lady the rose, and she gives you a book.
That's really primitive.
Primitive?
Wait, I think I know what you mean. What do you mean by that?
Well, why books for men and
exactly.
not women?
I know. It is a little dated.
But it's tradition. I'm sure that they know it doesn't mean anything other than this is a tradition, a cultural tradition.
Okay, but immediately a woman in my group said, really? I would kill you to give a book to the ladies? I mean, it's sort of like, you know, you girls stay home. We'll go off and do the learning. Well, you know, the man will have the education. You just have pretty rose. That'll tide you over.
A lot of traditions in
That's
Europe.
What that feels like.
Yeah, but we can't.
Your family's
I mean, that's
from
too
there.
Bad. I think
yeah.
Is it in Denmark? I think where is it Denmark or Norway where Christmas gifts are books?
Christmas books. Yeah, that sounds right. This is Valentine's Day, but it's not gender driven, Steve. I think that's the point too. That in Spain, the boys get books. They get to do some learning. They and the girl goes, oh, I get a rose.
Whereas in the U.S., the girls get gifts and the women get or the men get beat up.
And the men get nothing.
Right.
They get a fine.
This is all you brought?
No,
that's not true.
And the men get in trouble.
Right, that's what I meant.
That's Valentine's Day here. But, you know, they seem to be happy with it, and we were happy to be there. So thanks to those of you that traveled with us, and thank you for listening to WGN. Oh, and then here's another fun note. So you're on a plane, like Violetta says, you know, you're in the sky, and what are we doing? Watching movies. I watched 6 movies on the trip. Here they are. Greatest Showman on Earth. Paddington 2, Murder on the Orient Express, Father Figures, Downsizing, and Phantom Thread, the Daniel Day-Lewis movie.
That's sad.
Why?
Were any of those any good? Because I don't think any of them did very well.
Two of them, I thought, you know, this is the perfect place to watch it because what else am I going to do? I can't go to the gym. I'm just sitting here in a plane, flying through the sky, complaining about salty food. I might as well watch Downsizing, which I knew wasn't going to be good.
We should have had Brenda buy you a book for the trip.
I'll get to that in a minute. So I'm just watching movies. I'm just plowing through movies. Next thing you know, you've watched 3 movies and you're in another country. That's an amazing thing. So of those, Greatest Showman on Earth, Paddington 2, Murder on the Orient Express isn't a great movie, but the people in it are beautiful. Father Figures, I thought was pretty funny. Downsizing, Phantom Thread. Paddington 2 is the best movie you will ever watch. It's the one about the stuffed bear. It's not animated, but it's, you know, CG. It's a bear, and he lives with a family in England. Hugh Grant plays the bad guy in the movie. The animation is wonderful, and the voice of the bear is so sweet. And it's about the travels. And it's listed as a children's movie. It is for everybody. And I say that noting that Phantom Thread was fan-flipping-tastic. Oh my God, what a great movie Phantom Thread is. I know you don't want to watch a movie with Daniel Day-Lewis where he makes dresses and he's weird and they have to deal with that. That's what the movie's about. It's amazing, Phantom Thread. Paddington 2 is every bit as good and could not be more different. So there's my recommendations for you. Get in a plane, fly around the earth, and watch movies all day. It's 119 on WGN. There's a story in the news about some kids at a local school who go on to, this is their sort of, not exactly sure what you call it. It's sort of street activism, only in this case they board the L. I think it's the L, not Metro. They board the trains in the city of Chicago, and they hand out flyers and petition people to sign up for their cause. These are fifth graders who go to a South Loop school and are learning about activism. But what they're asking people to do, I think, is at least interesting and maybe controversial. Have you heard this story? In a minute on WGN. By the way, federal investigators now say they wiretapped Michael Cohen. That's our headline. Steve, is that like breaking this afternoon, like within the last half hour? I've talked about Michael Cohen and followed that story the last week or so. Is that...
Yeah, NBC did it first, and then ABC now has confirmed it.
That federal investigators wiretapped Michael Cohen. When?
Ahead of the raid.
Yeah, but I mean, how far back does it go?
Well, you know, sometimes the sources don't let you listen in on the phone calls.
Yeah.
But they're so ABC says they don't know for how long.
Okay, so what does that mean? What, Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's personal attorney, the guy that paid the hush money to Stormy Daniels.
Right. Well, this is, you know, a tease for the news coming up.
All right, then you'll do the news.
No, I'm just teasing you.
No, that's okay. I mean, the news isn't 5 minutes. I can wait that long.
Well, yeah. So, but I mean, obviously, the implication is they collected information during these phone calls that perhaps they took to the judge who said, hey, we need to go and take this guy's records, right? Because they were listening before they did the raid.
God, you remember how damning the Blago tapes were? And fascinating? I mean, it was just so interesting to hear how sausage was made in the Blagojevich administration.
Well, they're not done, right? I mean, the Republicans are using them against J.B. Pritzker still.
Yeah, exactly. So now we might someday hear the audio of Michael Cohen speaking to whomever. We don't know if we have the audio of him wheeling and dealing with Donald Trump.
Well,
right?
Really, I do have this in the news, but remember, there was reporting that Cohen and the president spoke by phone. I think in the day or two after the raid.
Okay, so his phone is bugged. Does he know that it's bugged?
No.
Sure, must, right?
No.
Cohen. I'm talking about Cohen.
No, they had a wiretap in place before the FBI raid.
Okay.
So they had a judge, you know, say, give them a warrant to listen in on his phone calls.
My brother's looking at me like, wow, what a stupid question. How are you even on the air? Well, sometimes one of the ends...
That's why it's a bug.
Sometimes there's two people on a phone conversation. One of them knows and the other one doesn't. That's...
So you speak in code.
Thank you.
Meet me at the restaurant and bring the money.
So this texter says about our conversation moments ago, Steve will have more in the news in moments. We were talking about tippers in the United States versus in Europe. Hi, John. Europeans love Americans when they dine out. They are thrilled to get a tip. I just returned from Ireland, and I feel better when I give a tip at least 10%, but not 20% like in America. So you, but Steve, when you travel in Ireland, and you've been to Ireland how many times? 10?
Seven or eight.
And if
Ireland
you,
is one of the places where they've given me money back.
Literally.
Literally.
So
at
you
a bar.
Literally don't tip. And do you look at them kind of sheepishly like, so you know,
well,
I'm just going to walk out and you're not going to get right. any more money, right?
So when you say €3, you just mean, because I'm just going to give you €3. And they say yes.
It feels like a crime. You go, okay.
It happened at a bar where I put down an extra euro for a tip for a pint, and the guy just slid it back to me.
Yeah, but see, that says one of two things. Either, hey, no thank you, what a nice gesture, but that's not how we do it here. Or, are you seriously, a euro? Come on. Are you kidding
me? No. It wasn't that. It was, maybe it was €100.
I just wanted to tell you one other quick story here, and I posted this in full on my Facebook page. on my trip, I read a book that Steve Bertrand gave me, or haven't finished it, but I started it. And it's one of the best dang things I've ever read. It's called The Feather Thief by Kirk Johnson. And I won't get into it here. But the other book that I brought along was James Comey's book. And I thought that was really fascinating. And I was taking notes and then bugging everybody along the way, going, well, James Comey said this. Well, did you know that James Comey said that? And I just want to share with you a paragraph from my Facebook post or book review, and then you can check it out later on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. And this is one thing I want to say about that. In a book that runs only 277 pages, all of the hullabaloo about James Comey's book, it's 277 pages. It's famous for what it says about Donald Trump, but Comey does not introduce us to the 45th president until page 189 of that 277-page book. The first 188 pages, not about Donald Trump, are a story worth reading. When he was 16, for instance, a gunman broke into the Comey house. It was a Friday night. His parents' older sister and youngest brother were out. He and another younger brother, Pete, were watching TV at home. With the robber's knee pinning Pete's back to the floor, the intruder pointed his gun at Comey and said, "You move, and I'll blow his head off." The gunman then ransacked the home, pushing the two boys throughout, finally locking them in a basement bathroom. Moments after hearing him leave, the boys looked up at the little window in the bathroom and saw the gunman's face looking down, warning them not to attempt an escape. When he disappeared, Comey's brother insisted that indeed they should try and get out. The gunman was probably the rapist who had been plaguing their community, and he might be off to harm someone else, he said. Comey argued that escape was a bad idea, but he couldn't keep his brother from opening and climbing out the window. Comey followed, and the gunman was there waiting. "We'll go back in," Comey promised, but the gunman said, "Too late, against the fence." And just then, his neighbor, the high school football coach with his Siberian husky, came upon the scene. Comey and his brother bolted for their home, ran inside, called the police. And when the police arrived, the boys ran out the front door, Comey holding a butcher knife. The cops pulled their weapons on him. When the gunman made a break from the neighbor's house to the woods and got away, Comey writes, "My encounter with the Ramsey rapist brought me years of pain. I thought about him every night for at least 5 years, not most nights, every night, and I slept with a knife at hand for far longer." Two things happened as a result. At the tender age of 16, he thereafter thought of his life as something precious. And he realized years later that the seed to search for justice and to try to make a difference in the world had been planted. And that's like, and that gets you to page 14 of this book. And he has been at the turning point of so many amazing moments in American justice in the last 20 years. He's the guy that put Martha Stewart in jail. And it goes on to page 189 when you finally meet the current president. If you've thought about reading the book but thought, oh, I don't want to get into all of that, I'd say get into at least that. It's 1:30. Steve's going to do that news you were talking about in a minute on WGN. The Village Leadership Academy is a private school in the South Loop area of Chicago. A teacher there named Bianca Jones is teaching her kids current events, history, and about activism. They have been doing what I describe as train takeovers, where her fifth graders board the L, I believe it's the L, and ask the passengers to sign a petition to change the name of Douglas Park. Douglas Park is named after one-time Illinois Senator Stephen A. Douglas, whose family owned slaves. The students want to change the name from Douglas with one S to Douglas with two S's, thereby honoring former slave activist and orator Frederick Douglass rather than Stephen Douglass. You shift sort of the angle on the park that, in a way, doesn't change at least the sound of its name. I brought this up on the Mincing Rascals podcast that we recorded earlier today, and we'll post that at the end of the show. And not everybody felt the same way about it. That teacher is in our studio. Bianca, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you, John.
How long have you been a teacher there?
I've been a teacher at VLA for 3 years.
This is fifth graders you do this with?
Yes.
And sixth graders too, right?
Yes.
So we're talking kids 10, 11, 12 years old?
Correct.
Wow. Is it, how long have you been doing this? Did you say 3 years?
3 years.
And what's the purpose of this?
The purpose of this is, well, we call them grassroots campaigns. So you have all of your standard subjects throughout the day. And at our school, we also think it's important for students to engage in a social activism curriculum.
So it's not always this cause per se.
No. So each year, students decide what campaign or what issue they would like to address.
Could it be one that already exists, Me Too or something like that, or something else they want to hit
it
you right into? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they came up with this idea?
That's true. So this actually started last year. So I've been the standing fifth grade homeroom teacher for a couple years now. My fifth graders last year, we started with a campaign around police violence. They were hearing about it a lot in the news, and they wanted to do something about it. So as we started working, I noticed that they knew kind of like trigger words, and they knew some of the more unfortunate details, but we didn't know any stories of any victims. We didn't know who these people were as humans. Did some research around victims from Chicago, came down to two. There's Ronnie Mann Johnson and Rakia Boyd. Both of these individuals were killed near Chicago parks, Washington Park and Douglas Park, respectively. We said we want to do something to commemorate them around the parks. Well, we contacted both aldermen, heard back from Michael Scott in North Lawndale, started working around what we could do to honor Rakia. He said, well, she isn't a significant historical figure. I cannot rename the park after her. I don't know what we can do, but I do know that this park is named after Stephen Douglas and he owned slaves. I've always wanted to rename it to Frederick Douglass Park, but I don't have the time. Will you spearhead a campaign? We said yes. We walked away that day and we started working, and we've been working on it ever since.
So what are you doing?
What are we doing? Right now, we are garnering community support. So we're doing that through train takeovers. That means that we have a script that we do. We have a chant, and we tell everyone we believe that this is an injustice.
You're
in our
right.
Community.
You board the L.
We board the L.
You and how many kids?
20.
Twenty of you walk onto an L.
Twenty of us walk onto an L.
And somebody announces something.
Yes,
we have. And it's not this is a stick up.
No, it's not this is a stick up. Or is it? I mean, you know, it's a social justice stick up.
Exactly. So,
yes.
So walk me through it. What is it like and what's the reaction?
The reaction has actually been phenomenal and outstanding. We had a lot of conversations going in where my students were concerned. They said, well, what if people are mean to us? What if people reject us? What do we do? And I said, well, you know what? Rejection is never going to be the worst thing that you encounter in your life. If anyone rejects us, we're going to move on. But we're going to assume the best in every individual.
They're walking down the aisle with a petition?
Walking down the aisle. So we go in and we tell everybody who we are while we're here. We tell them the information that they need to know about the park, and we describe to them how we think it's insulting that it's named after a slaveholder.
Yeah.
And then we tell them that what they can do. And we have paper petitions available for everyone to sign, and we also give them information about how to reach our change.org petition, which is online.
This is not a new issue, bringing down monuments or statues or changing the names of parks or lakes. I spent time in Minneapolis. There's a Lake Calhoun up there. Calhoun is not a name that history is going to remember favorably around slavery and minorities. So they've been wondering, should we change the name of one of the great city lakes of Minneapolis from Calhoun to something else? And not everybody embraces the idea. Some people say, if Douglas's family owned slaves, we should not forget that. Let's keep it named, that unfortunate name, so that we don't forget that history. What do you say to that?
I say that's wrong. I think that we need to honor people who are on the right side of history. And when you name an institution, be it a park, be it a building, whatever, after someone, then that person should be someone who is remembered in history for the right reasons. I don't believe in naming something for someone so that we can remember what was wrong. There are so many people in history who have done so many great things. Why focus on what's wrong when we can focus on the people who are right?
Yeah. So then would you have to change the signs and lettering and things like that? Or I kind of like the idea of wherever the word Douglas appears, slapping maybe off kilter another S,
mm-hmm.
so that it would sort of connote a change and it might actually emphasize the point. You know what I mean?
I love that too. I think that unfortunately we know that uniform look of Chicago Park District signs.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're up against, but I think that's a great idea.
Thank
because
you.
To me it involves, it like jars your memory to think like, oh, this was something and that was something else and somebody made that change. And
what's
it was
the process?
The sixth graders.
What's the process by which one goes to change the name of a park?
So then now we're kind of at the bureaucratic part, which is to file a petition with the Board of Commissioners, and that needs a 45-day period to garner support from the community, show that you have it, and then they vote in a closed meeting.
Stephen A. Douglas was a famous great Illinoisan, right?
He was a famous Illinoisan. I'm not going to call him great.
Not great, yeah. But I mean, some people are going to remember him that way.
Some people are.
And so have you run into any resistance, or what's been the general reaction you're getting?
The general reaction is that of support, overwhelming support for us.
Yeah. What's the likelihood that you're going to get a change? Does the alderman give you any feedback on that?
Yes, the alderman totally supports us. He's agreed to use his TIF dollars to change the signage. All we need is for the Park District Board of Commissioners to say, go ahead and make the change.
And have they tipped their hand on this to you? Do you know what they're thinking?
Not so. What they're thinking is that this sets a huge precedence. This is a world-class city, and this is a major park.
Okay, and what about that?
If we say yes to you, we're going to have to say yes to everybody.
Ta-da. Yeah.
And we say, so what?
Yeah, right.
We've done a lot of work. We are in this for the right reasons. We're not only going to go about the process the right way, filing every single petition that is necessary, but we're also going to have the community support.
Do we have a Jefferson or a Washington or let's see. I mean, what is it? 7 of the first 10 or 5 of the first 7 presidents owned slaves? So should we change all of the streets and lakes and parks with their names on it too?
I think so.
Yeah. Or that's not your problem. I mean, maybe that's, I don't know what the answer to that question is, but I know that question is there. And I think as a practical matter, you guys need to think, okay, how are we going to convince them to do it for us? Knowing full well, if they do it for us, then they're going to, let's help them answer the question about, because they ain't going to change the name of Jefferson Street and Washington Street and Adams Street and Chicago. That's just, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's going
to
happen.
I think that there are ways around it to commemorate. We can choose right now if the Washington Park is named after George Washington, we could honor Harold Washington. I think there's also another idea that the way that we name things in history doesn't have to be seen as so static. This change does not have to be forever. You know, we could decide 10 years from now, we could put it up for debate every 5 or 10 years. Like, okay, let's commemorate a new historian, a new national figure.
You know, it's funny you mention that because a good friend of mine is Thomas Jefferson, the third president of the United States. We do these stage shows where he and I go on stage and talk about issues.
Okay.
And he always says, you guys should tear up the Constitution. Every generation, every 15, 23 years, whatever a generation was back then, our sacred Bill of Rights, the whole thing, tear it all up, start all over again, and do what fits you now rather than us 250 years ago.
I agree.
To your point.
Mm-hmm.
It's 151 on WGN. The Village Leadership Academy is a private school, South Loop of Chicago, right?
Correct.
And this activist teacher. It's funny because when we had free period when I was in fifth grade, which was in another place at another time, we weren't learning about activism. Are fifth graders too young to get embroiled in this sort of thing?
No, I think it's perfect. What I love about my students is that they have a critical intellect and they're also youthful. It does not take away from their youthfulness.
I was scared witless doing a speech in front of my peers about butterflies. The idea that we would board a train with strangers who don't want us on there and ask them to sign a petition about an issue they might not even agree with is off the charts.
For me too. And to watch them do it is amazing. To watch them go up to people and, you know, with confidence and then see people change their minds actively is phenomenal.
All right, let's take a break. We'll have a couple minutes when we come back. If you have a question, comment, you can text or call 312-981-7200. Bianca Jones and some of her terrific and very handsome young students are actually in our studio right now. We'll pick up here in a minute on WGN. Bianca Jones is in our studio. She's a teacher at the Village Leadership Academy in the South Loop of Chicago. Figure Roosevelt Road and then a little west of, say, the museum campus Soldier Field. How many students did you say are in that school?
About 170.
And what is your name, young man?
My name is Braden Jackson.
And what is your name?
My name is Shiloh Lockhart.
They have a good handshake, too, these two. When we met before we were on the air, They look you in the eye. They squeeze your hand firmly. And they speak up the way you want somebody to. Props to you guys if that's what you're instilling in them.
100%.
And your school, you said, is sort of activist-based. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. Our co-founders had that in mind, that they wanted students to be socially engaged and active in their communities.
You guys like doing this stuff where you go on the train and try and get them to change the name of the park?
Yeah, I love it.
Is it a little scary when you go on there and approach complete strangers?
Sometimes.
Not really.
Yeah. Do you think that you're going to be successful?
Yeah, I think we're going to be able to make the change.
How have people treated you when you get on the train?
I would say people have treated us. They sign and share, and even like when, as we're saying like the chant and like where you can go and things, people just pull out their phones and go look it up, or like with the paper petition, they take it and then they just sign their name.
Yeah, you, is that what happens for you too?
People treat us pretty good. Like, some people, if they give a simple no, we just go to the next person and just keep going on until somebody accepts it. And sometimes we're able to convince people enough to where they do pull out their phones and sign immediately.
Fifth graders. Fifth graders.
Brayden is in sixth grade.
Sixth graders. Mm-hmm. 12th graders. I'm not kidding. Well done, guys. Okay, Bianca, it's nice to meet you. Good luck to you guys. Is there anything that our listeners can do to help you guys out if they feel so inspired? What do you want them to do?
Tell them, Shyla.
I would love if you guys can go to change.org/rename Douglas Park and click the link and just sign and share our petition on all your social media to let us have enough signatures so the Board of Commissioners can say, we're just going to make the change.
You haven't heard the end of this. Change.org, rename Douglas Park. Okay, guys. Bianca, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
News is next on GM.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
That's what we do at 209. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We're in this location for as long as we can. Then they're going to kick us out. We're going to go across the river, but I'm not going to talk about that today. When we move, at least they're not going to automate us. Did you see that story about the automation of hiring, of job recruitment?
Is this the Russia story?
Yeah.
No, you were telling me about it earlier.
A Russian startup has created a new way to help companies connect with job seekers and interview them. Rather than having an HR person interview dozens of people a day or hundreds maybe a week, I don't know how many people a competent HR person can get through, but a robot can actually interview 15,000 people a day.
I feel like the robot would also be like lying, you know, once you're trying to like fudge something on your resume or say something that might not be as accurate. The robot's got like red light's going to go off, be like, oh, we can see pressure in the eyes and darting, and that's a lie.
Yeah, it's probably much more about that than what is your favorite tree. You know, they'll be able to gauge.
Or what would you bring
physical
to the beach?
Responses to...
Well, so this is... here's the actual audio of it. Here's a couple... This is what... I think there's a couple guys, but what I have for you is one guy interviewing for a job. I guess the robot has the questions and the prompts for this client per se, and this guy is applying for it.
Hello. My name is Vera. Thanks for your time. Right now we will make a short interview. It will be smooth and smart. Are you ready?
Yes, thanks.
All right. For a start, tell me, how do you grow the net promoter score of your accounts?
Well, the net promoter score is basically...
This is the actual interview. This is the actual audio.
My practice is to make customers happy and to keep brands' promises.
And by the way, what was the best customer service you have ever received?
Well, it was with Zappos, of course. I'm doing my best to perform like...
Me too. Now please define the word leadership in one sentence, just without using the word lead.
It is the art to inspire people to act together towards the same goal.
Brilliant. Then, if you like this format, what one word would those who know you best describe you with?
Professional.
Wow. That's inspiring.
That's it. I mean...
My favorite part was
You do get that when you're talking on a phone, if you're talking to AT&T or, you know, some major corporation, and they'll say, hold on while I look that up. Like, you give me your social security number while you're waiting, and all of a sudden you hear that.
You hear some paper, they're like.
Yeah, and I'm like, this is so stupid. This is a recording of somebody shuffling papers and hitting a keyboard and going, that's thoughtful. And you can say whatever you want, and they're going to go, okay, let me look that up. I mean, it's, but it must work. We must think, oh, I know it's a robot or a recording, but I like the. There's something in my brain that likes that. You know,
well,
I've been trained.
They already do it with resumes, right? I mean, resumes are all scanned for code words and turns of a phrase and things like that. People don't read your resume.
They don't?
No, not if it's at a big company or something like that, no.
Yeah.
But it's really frustrating because you could be so qualified and they would never know.
Right, and who would take note of the lilac paper you use?
Or, right, the high-quality bond paper and the font right. that I personally selected.
Did you put a circle over your eye or just a dot?
Yeah, I put a little heart. I hope that helps. It shows I love working for this.
Scan says signature not legible.
But that's probably what the computer is doing, though, is it's the same way you and I might try and type in active buzzwords into our resume and letter. It's using, you know, voice activation. It can hear. It can talk. But you don't get the sense that, like, when she says brilliant, how does... Just really? Was that brilliant? I don't even... That guy's English wasn't even great, right?
Neither was Vera's.
Hey, that's my mom's name.
Well, I
that's
took
a
this...
a pretty name.
All right, so I took...
Okay.
Well, look, we're working with a Violetta and an Elif Garris here, so Vera is...
No, I just said her English wasn't good.
Oh, I thought somebody said something
well,
about the
name. Well, she's Russian, isn't she?
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
And she can be a male or female. She can be a male or female voice as well. So I don't know if everybody can do this, but I took the same
Everything's
interview.
Cross-gender in the 21st century.
Here's what it's like when I interviewed with Vera.
Hello, my name is Vera.
Vera, by the water cooler. What's up?
Right now we will make a short interview. It will be smooth and smart.
Oh my God, what a coincidence. Smooth and smart was my porn name.
Are you ready?
I was born that way, Vera. Let's roll.
All right.
By any chance, are you going to say open the pod bay doors, Hal?
For a start, tell me how do you grow the net promoter score of your accounts?
How do I grow accounts? Simple. I tell them I'm Lou Manfredini and then we just sit back and count the cash.
And by the way, what was the best customer service you have ever received?
The best customer service I ever received? I got my accountant to lie about our taxes and we got a huge refund.
Me too. Now please define the word leadership in one sentence, just without using the word lead.
A good leader is someone who's really worked a long time at something and now they have like a lot of money and vacation days out the wazoo, right?
Brilliant. Then, if you like this format, what one word would those who know you best describe you with?
Lost. That comes up a lot. You know, literally lost, mentally lost, physically lost, lost my keys, lost, right? Just like totally lost.
Wow. That's inspiring.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
This is scary. This is the future.
What's the problem?
I think you know what the problem is just as well as I do.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This mission is too important for me to allow you to jeopardize it. This conversation can serve no purpose anymore.
Story of my life. By the way, 50-year anniversary. 50-year anniversary in April, right? Was it April 11th? 50th anniversary of 2001 A Space Odyssey.
The 2nd. April 2nd.
April 2nd, yeah. But I got the feeling, no matter what you say, she's going to go, huh, brilliant. You know, you could tell her to pound sand. Huh, thank you, inspiring. So
there's yeah. nothing like person-to-person communication with interviews.
Thank you. What's the matter, Steve?
No, I just think it's, I think it's probably the wave of the future. You'll sit in a room, and I think it'll be improved by in that voice. That seems kind of stilted.
Obvious.
Yeah, but, and you'll answer questions, and they will... judge your physiological response to it as well as your words, and then the bottom will fall out of the booth and you'll fall into a pit.
If they don't like you. Bing.
Have you seen Up in the Air?
Yeah.
just watched it for the first time and it reminded me of that. You know the premise, right?
Yeah, right. The George Clooney one?
That yeah, movie? George yeah. And there's a new girl on the team who, it's a firing firm. They are hired to fire people, and they're Skyping people as they fire them.
I don't remember that. That's one of the things they do in the movie. I just remember
this new girl on the team suggests that they fire those people that they're hired to fire via Skype or via video conference.
Oh yeah. And what does Clooney not want to do it that way? Is that
right? Because he wants to be on the road instead. He wants to be away from home.
Yeah. Oh, so it's not about he wants to have the human interaction, the warm personal touch of letting somebody go.
Correct.
Yeah. I just remember when that movie came out, and I'm a George Clooney fan. He's my man crush, is George Clooney. And the problem with that movie was it came out, like, what was the year of that? 2006, 2007? Elif, look up the date of Up in the Air with George Clooney.
Calculating.
So she'll get us that. But this is my recollection, that when it came out, it was when everybody was getting fired or let go. It was way too real, you know, as a guy in an industry that's struggling, who fit the profile of a lot of people in that movie that were getting let go. I did not enjoy that movie. That is a good, tough movie to watch, at least at that particular point in time. But while I was gone, I don't know if you guys saw this. I don't know if it was a major story. I mean, I know it wasn't a major story, but didn't Katie Couric interview a sex bot? Right, you know, they have robots now for sexual purposes, and I think Katie Couric interviewed one of them. Am I just making this up, or did that happen?
Matt Lauer couldn't get there.
Yeah,
there is a Matt Lauer joke in there. You're absolutely right. I'm pretty sure that happened.
I'm reading about it right now.
Yeah,
but on Nightline.
Yeah, the point is that the robot interaction is going to get a lot better. You know, my fear has been that at some point they could have a robot talk show, right? Somebody would call and go, hey, John, what do you think about the Cubs? And then it would hear Cubs, and it would say, yes, how about those Cubs? It would know the score of last night's game. Don't you think Hugh Darvish is off to a good start? Or whatever, right? Or a bad start. And it would know enough to probably have a conversation as good as some of the sports shows I've heard. Oh, no, wait, Kevin's sitting over there, and he's listening to this right now, so it probably hurts his feelings. Are you listening to any of this, Kevin? I'm imagining that we could probably get a robot to do a sports call-in talk show.
No shot.
Because it's so data-driven, the robot would know all the stats. It'd be, in fact, in some ways, it'd be awesome. They could say, hey, well, what was the date of that Kerry Wood thing? You know, when he threw all the strikeouts, and then boom, it would know.
Yeah, but opinion drives everything now. Opinion. A robot can't come up with its own opinion.
Yeah, but it could. I mean, maybe you could say, and you could program it to, whenever they say Kerry Wood, say best pitcher ever, or say something, you know, it would know the prompts.
I guess, but people might disagree. I mean, you can't for sure, like... Yeah, every day on ESPN, you put on it's Michael Jordan versus LeBron debates. I mean, those are debates, and people have their own opinions.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I say no sports robots. I like my job, John. I don't want to be driven out of this industry by robots.
Pardon me. What did you want to say?
Nothing. I was just going to say it's nice of you to reduce, you know, a team member's job to
come on, John.
Robotics.
Yeah, yeah.
More than a robot. I'm a man.
Traffic
on
the other
hand. Feelings. I have a soul, John. Yeah, traffic on the other hand, that could be robotic. That is
really not a lot of opinion.
You can't
here.
Really debate on whether or not it's 50 minutes for, you know, if the Kennedy's a better route than the, you know, whatever it may be.
I give alternates. Well, sometimes look, my suggestions.
No offense, V, but traffic is robotic in many ways.
It
now.
Is.
Right. It's just numbers.
But I am computing that information to you. I'm giving it to you in a nice way.
I know. It's the voice. Listen, I still go to banks and walk into the buildings, and I have some friends that cannot believe that. I still crave the human interaction at a bank, and that's what you're getting here. By the way, Elif, did you look up the Up in the Air? When did that come out?
Up in the Air came out in 2009.
Well, the producer apparently can be reduced to a robot as well.
John Williams here, back from a really fun trip organized by Kelly Cruises. Visit kellycruises.com. A bunch of listeners, Brenda and I, were in Barcelona and cruised all the way to Rome. Some folks stayed an extra day or two in Barcelona. If you were going to pick a European city, and I've been to a few now, What would you say, Steve, if you're going to pick a city in Europe to spend a few days in, and it can be as obvious as Paris or maybe less obvious, a little village in Ireland, but I would say Paris and Barcelona are two cities that
I like. Barcelona,
I would go back to every year.
I like Florence, too.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never been to France. I'm begging my dad to go with me this summer.
Paris is easier to do than you might think. I mean, like, if you come to Chicago and stay downtown, you can walk to Millennium Park, which is worth it. You can walk to Navy Pier, which I wouldn't advise a tourist to do that. But you could walk to the beach. You can walk to the museum campus. Obviously, you'd Uber a cab. I mean, you're doing a lot of walking here. But my point is that the city's very accessible. The Mag Mile, State Street, Michigan Avenue, it's all right here. Then if you want to go to a game, you know, Wrigley Field's relatively nearby. But you're going to have to take public transportation or get a ride out to one of the ballparks. But it's a doable city. Anyway, when you go to Paris, my experience was if you stay in a hotel that's situated just right. In our case, it was there's the Louvre right across the river, which isn't too far from Notre Dame. And from there, we jogged to the Eiffel Tower, or the Arc de Triomphe in the neighborhood, for crying out loud.
You know where I really would want to go if I went to Paris? Mm. Versailles, yeah. The palace.
And that's public transportation. You got to take a train or get a vehicle.
But it's an easy train.
And it's worth it. Oh, my God.
One
of the best memories I had, aside from the tourist spots, right, or when you happen upon things.
Yeah.
So Sharon and I took a train out to Versailles one time, and they happen to have a flea market there. Just the town.
In Versailles?
In the little town, the sleepy town of Versailles, before you got to the palace.
Yeah.
And we bought a silver, it was a leaded crystal pitcher, which set off the detectors we went through because of the
really?
Lead in it.
Really?
Yeah. And they also had, they had a Nazi helmet there.
Oh, wow.
That they were selling at a flea market.
It was the real deal, huh?
Yeah.
So what do you do with that?
Well, you don't buy it. You might pick it up.
I'm a collector. Yeah. Well, the largest, they advertise it as flea market. In the world is in Paris as well.
Yeah, you went to that with my group, right? I've not been to that place.
So we said we want to be there when that happens. So it was on a Steve Bertrand trip. In fact, now that you mentioned Steve, is one you organized for us, so we were doing this. And so I don't think everybody in the group loved going to the junk sale as much as I did. But
right.
It was blocks and blocks and blocks. And it was the week that Prince had died. And everywhere, people were playing Prince music. They had Prince posters. Purple Rain was everywhere. They washed the Eiffel Tower in lights of purple. It was just, it was a very interesting moment. And you know how you turn a corner and suddenly you have a moment that you'll always remember on your trip. We sort of fell into a little bistro area to have lunch. And our guide kind of knew the drill there. And so suddenly carafes of red wine are at our tables that we're sharing with people we don't know. And then a three-piece jazz band walks up onto the stage nearby, and they're just playing music. They were gorgeous, which worked out well for the ladies. The music was good. You're drinking wine in a cafe.
See, that's what I like, the real stuff.
And so, you know, you want to do the Eiffel Tower, say. But if you get lucky, you have a moment like that. And so now I don't know why I'm telling you all this, except that we just got back from that trip. Thanks to Kelly Cruises for organizing that one. But you can't go wrong with either of those two, Kelly Cruises or Steve Bertrand Travel. We've had good times. So state police say drivers clamored to pick up cash on an interstate in Indianapolis after the back doors of a Brinks armored truck swung open and hundreds of thousands of dollars flew out. Troopers at the scene initially said up to $600,000 in cash had flown across the interstate. They later said, we're not sure how much. State police spokesperson John Perrine says investigators don't know exactly how much cash was in the truck when it was lost at about 9 a.m. Wednesday on I-70 of the city's southwest side. Bags of money were falling out of the back onto the interstate, said a spokesperson. Something out of a movie scene where you have bills, loose bills, flying all over the interstate, vehicles stopping, people getting out of their cars. Here's my question for you. Say at that scene or the next day, you go, hey, look, that looks like a roll of 20s. You pull over and pick up the 20s. Do you get to keep the 20s? Violetta, go.
Yes.
Bertrand, go.
Prison.
You didn't say if you're keeping them.
Oh, that's what I mean. Violetta, go.
Yes.
Well, back to square one.
No, I meant I want to know if Steve's keeping the money and just...
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
no, Steve's giving the money back, right?
Well, I don't know what I would... it depends on how I found it, but...
Whose money is it?
It's the bank's money, and
state
you found it.
And state police made it clear it's a crime.
Well, whenever you find money, it's not your money, right? I mean, you should, I guess, in theory, never keep something that's not yours. It's somebody else's cash.
Well, I mean, if you see a 20 on the sidewalk,
which I did once,
and then I mean, I think you're okay to keep that if no one's
now. If you saw it fall out of someone's pocket and you keep it,
you should right. You should say, "Hey, you
horrible.
Dropped it." If you see a 20 fall out of somebody's pocket, you should absolutely go up to them and say, "Hey, you dropped this."
Or
five.
Even if you found someone's wallet with their identification.
Oh, come on, let me do it again. Absolutely, if you see a 20 fall out of someone's pocket, you should come up to them and say, "Hey, you dropped this $5 bill."
Oh, sorry.
And we're back.
You stepped on his Lincoln.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you're so smooth at telling the joke. I didn't hear it. Yeah.
Or maybe it wasn't all that funny. So the cops say that anybody who picked up the money could be charged with theft, and they urge them to contact state police to return it.
Well, if you saw it come out of the truck, then I would hope that people would know that that's not.
Okay, but if you're listening to us anywhere in South Indianapolis and you happen to find a $20 bill, and it sounds like a lot of you are going to do this, you should take it to the nearest police station where they will promptly go to a nearby tavern and have a beer after work.
$600,000.
Aren't
right?
banks insured? Like, to me.
Well, yeah.
The money's
but, so
already
what?
Gone.
The money's gone. They're going to get their money back. Insurance companies got
yeah.
enough money to go.
Well, but if someone goes and takes, you know, your computer, you're like, well, aren't you insured?
No, I mean, the computer's still, not insured.
It well, is you, if it's theft.
Well, I mean, yeah. So you can probably get a check from your insurance company to get a new computer.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, the only harm in that. Really, the only person that loses is all of us a little bit because we'll pay more for premiums for insurance. That's all. Banks will charge you more for fees because they have to make up the premiums that are going to be higher because of the loss the insurance company suffered. That's the only. It's just minuscule. It's not a lot of loss when that happens. But you've got to be able to sleep with yourself. You would know when you picked up that money
that you took the bank's money.
Right.
Did you see the truck spill all the cash, though?
No, I did not in this scene. So what's your point about that?
Well, if you didn't know whose it was, then you shouldn't feel as guilty unless it was wads of cash on the ground. Then you go,
oh, there's so much to unpack with this, Elif. So if you didn't see it and it's not a lot of money.
Yeah, like a $20 bill.
Then the sin is less than if you happen to find $500 in 20s in a little sleeve, right?
Right, because then you know that it came from some corporate.
If you are listening to us right now and you live in South Indianapolis and you find a $20 bill near I-70, that's not yours. That's a bank's. Are you going to return it? Yes or no?
No.
I think most people.
Just pocket it.
You know the answer. I don't know if anything's ever happened to you before. 312-981-7200, but tell me what you did.
Or maybe it's one of those things where you go to the bank and they go, you know, you're such a good civilian for bringing this in. Just keep it.
Yeah, that's going to happen, Violetta. That's going to happen. The texters are saying what?
708 says, you're missing the point. The money is not yours. It's not rightfully yours, so you're not entitled to it. That's Jan. And 630 says, don't overcomplicate things. You do the right thing.
Well, and put it in your pocket.
Literally, when they said don't overcomplicate things, I thought they were going to say, enjoy your good fortune. Take the money.
Serendipity. Look at this 20.
Look.
And I'm sorry, but this is funny. Another 630 says, the hell with the bank. They have all the billions, and I don't.
Right. I know. Trust me, this 20 means a lot more to me than it does to Wells Fargo, for crying out loud. Plus, you know this. This is just, I probably shouldn't say this because it's a good sponsor of ours and I advocate for her and it. The laws are that if, for instance, you pay your student loan back after 10 straight years, if you don't miss a payment, you made 120 payments on your student loan after 10 years, you don't have to make any more payments. The loan's forgiven. even though somebody gave you money, charged you interest, and you're supposed to pay back, you signed the contract, if you owe them money afterwards, you don't have to pay them anymore. The loan is forgiven. And the reason that we justify it, there's a number of ways you can rationalize it or legalize it. It's the law. And if you don't know that, you should call our sponsor because she'd be happy to walk you through it. Imagine that. But the reason that it's easy to do is because it's the banks and they've got all the money. And that's what we say. It's so easy to vilify the banks. They've got the money. I hate that I have to pay those ATM fees. Bah. But a bank's just a business. And you did a deal with him. I mean, imagine if you made payment on your car after 2.5 years and it's a 3-year loan and you didn't miss a payment. We go, yeah, well, car dealers, cars got, the car companies have a lot of money. Just stop paying. And we said, that's okay. That cannot be okay. I don't know how you have an outstanding obligation. And then because you've been paying pretty good on it, we say that goes away. And I think one of the reasons we enable ourselves to do that is because we think the banks have all the money anyway. They got enough.
Right. But if you really think about it, the only reason banks have money is because it's someone's money.
Hold on, I'm going to write that down. The only reason banks have money...
It's other people's money that they've put in the bank for safekeeping or for whatever reason.
What's your point about that?
So it's not really the bank's money. It's another individual's money.
Fair enough. Right. And the bank makes money lending it out and then charging people interest as they pay back the loans, and that's how they make their money. Cops say if you find any of that, you're going to go to jail. Lots of calls about this. This has happened to you too, huh? Cash blowing around the highway in Indiana. John, think about the armored car drivers that are going to lose their job if all the money is not returned. I think they lose their job anyway. Like, were they just throwing it in the back with pitchforks? Shouldn't the money be in bags and bundled and secured? How do the doors of an armored truck fly open and $600,000 goes raining onto the highway? That just does not happen. To me, Frank, you're on WGN. Hello.
John, former armored car driver 30 years ago. Mathematically impossible for that door to open and the money to fly out, okay? There's a bolt that goes into the floor, okay? There's a key lock and there's another cross member lock, okay? For all three of those to open is impossible. Then number two. The money would have to be sitting on the very back of the truck where the door is, and they would have had to hit about 20 severe bumps, and maybe it would have fallen out the back. Impossible. Number three, the armored car company provides the insurance. The bank is not responsible. It's the armored car company that's responsible. Yeah. They have insurance. It was an inside job, bottom line.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes good sense. Makes good sense. But then, what's the point of an inside job unless you just happen to have all your buddies in street sweepers behind you? I mean, because you got to pick up the money then, right?
John, somebody probably got away with $100,000 or $200,000.
Right. Oh, that's
what
it is.
And the rest of the money was blowing around.
That's it. So we'll grab some bags, and you guys then say, "Well, I probably blew out the thing." Meanwhile, you put it in your duffel bag and ran home. Something like that.
And there's complete chaos. There's hundreds of people, or 50 people, or 25, or whatever.
Frank has thought this through.
Nobody's keeping track of anything.
Yeah. How many times?
Inside job, John.
How many times did you do this, Frank?
Zero.
Yeah.
It's a Hollywood script here.
Oh my gosh! Are you kidding me, Frank? Thank you for the call. Thank you for your service.
Bye.
To our nation. I don't know. I just felt appropriate at the end there.
Wouldn't you feel dirty and wrong if you're stuffing your pockets with this money?
You haven't been listening. No, not us.
I know I heard you. I feel that, of course, I knew what you would do.
I would feel wrong.
Elif would feel wrong.
Oh, I would feel wrong. I mean,
I would feel wrong, but I'd still take it.
Well, we know you would, Viola.
You would, too. You would take it.
I don't know if I would.
You know, I think this is interesting because I'm a talk show host. What would be more tempting? Like, $20? I don't feel that bad. It's $20, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But say you happen to find $200,000, which could be a game changer for your life, right? So then you say...
You don't keep $200,000.
I know, but $200,000, now that's going to fix a lot of problems.
Someone's going to find you if
you keep
$200,000.
People are looking for $200,000. $20, okay, but even then, I would still feel a little...
Here's what I think.
Feel $20.
I mean, I'm not trying to be Mr. Moral High Ground here. I'm just saying you would feel
you
a little.
You can be, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe you... I don't know.
It's better. I think if... My hope would be I'm going to return this money to, if I know whose it is. And in this case, it sounds
happen.
Like...
Ain't going to happen.
Well, and they're going to give me some portion of
private
it.
Private citizens do that. Private citizens do that. Insurance companies, banks, armored trucks, they don't do that.
Yeah. I was at a bar once and, you know, you find like a 10 or a 5 on the floor.
Yeah.
And I don't keep that. Like, I feel weird. I'll just put it back on the bar assuming it was someone's tip. They didn't get it and... Just leave it
I don't
bar.
Believe
Saint, I do.
St. Patrick's Day this year, when this town just gets its absolute stupidest, and I'm walking down Sheridan over by Wrigley Field, and everybody is just drunk and walking the streets crooked. And it's 1 p.m. And I find a wad of bills that turned out to be $12, 5 and 7 ones, which when I first picked it up, I thought, I've got something here. And then I kind of looked through it and I thought, it's just some dumb drunk who dropped $12. Whenever I pick up money like that, I immediately look around to see if anybody's looking at me because I don't want to be the guy going, we watched Average Citizens to see if they would do the honest thing. So I first make sure I'm not on some sort of candid camera, right?
Right, you like hold it out and kind of walk around. Like, yeah, I don't know. Whose is this?
Is this yours, stranger person?
So, okay, I guess it's nobody's. I'll just take it
I'm
then.
Paying face value to, hey, I looked around. I was open to. Right,
you gotta, let's look at the tape.
You got to sell it a little bit.
I'm selling it.
John, you immediately on this tape place the $12 in your pocket without even looking or trying find the owner.
I always gaze around so that you might make eye contact with me. But this time, that gaze was shorter because I was so ticked at all of the stupid drunk people in Chicago that day. I thought, you know what? This is my $12. You do not deserve these. If you are so drunk that at 1 p.m, you're dropping a wad of cash and you don't even know it, that's my money now. I do not feel bad. In fact, I'm doing you a favor by taking this money because next
year. That's two beers you didn't need.
You're not going to get any drunker this year. And next year, you're not going to be so stupid drunk that you're dropping money by Wrigley Field.
And also, I don't understand people who just think that's the most fun thing they can do in their lives.
Just walk around downtown or any town getting drunk on New Year's.
St. Patrick's Day.
You can do it once or twice. Yeah. Live it up a little bit.
Rokan, Anna DeVlantis, back in the studio. Hi, campers.
Good to see you, John.
Welcome home, John.
Hello. We missed you.
So, K.S. Barcelona.
What?
Madrid. Where were you? Or were you in Madrid?
What is Barcelona?
Yeah.
I was in Barcelona.
K.S. Barcelona.
Oh, that was...
That's right, because they do the Barcelona.
I thought that was a lisp. That was a...
No, that's Castilian, yes. That's what that is.
Catalonian or...
Castilian, yes.
It does sound so strange, doesn't it?
I don't know. I have no idea. That's all I know.
Because
during the Olympics, people are always going, you know, we are going to Barcelona. And I'm like, what are you doing? And Antonio Banderas says that too. Because we just come back from filming in Barcelona.
I got back yesterday and listened to a lot of your show. I'd like you to now say Barcelona as a person from that part of the country who is Johnny Depp. Could you do that for me, please?
Oh, gosh. That might even strain
you. I can't actually do that without the sound effects.
I don't think I can both of them.
All right, what's on the program today?
All right, a lot. Mr. Skilling's going to join us right off the top here because we got the heavy weather moving through, as they like to say in aviation. Paul Vallis, he wants to be mayor. He'll be here in the 3 o'clock hour as well. Mm-hmm. Lester Holt joins us, gets us all set up on what's going on in the world. Royal Oaks from ABC News, a legal analyst. I've worked with Royal Oaks for 25 years. I think this will be close to our 25th anniversary of doing stuff together. Huh. He's going to comment on Rudy Giuliani because Royal actually, you know, practiced against Rudy or, you know, in the same world as Rudy for a long time. And what it is that, what did we just see last night?
Do you think that Rudy was making stuff up? Like, did he know everything he was saying or was he kind of speculating on the fly?
To me, it almost seemed like he was too comfortable with Hannity. And those are the worst kinds of interviews for the person being interviewed because he relaxed and he probably said some things that could come back.
For the person he's representing,
But he also wanted but he was trying to deflect. I think there was a little bit of method to the madness, and there was quite a bunch of madness because he's got that thing where he looks at you in the top. You can see the tops of the whites of his eyes all the time when he's making a point. You're like, oh God, he's going to go crazy. It was very day room. One flew over the cuckoo's nest. And so there was a moment though, even when, I'll tell you, this is the thing that got me when Hannity was stunned, and Hannity couldn't figure out a way to save his own clients in that case. You know, and he was sort of like, and he had to go back, and he had to go,
are you sure?
That he really didn't know, though, right?
It was a bit like the Fox and Friends interview with the president at certain points, where they're like, whoa.
Yeah, the part where you said he knew, you meant he didn't know, right? That's what you said, right?
Right. Oh,
not
man.
Didn't, right.
All right, have a good show.
Oh, by the way, Ron Majors, broadcast legend, will be here in 6 o'clock hour to talk Kentucky Derby. He'll make you some money with the Swami's Fix. And a very special guest, secret prognosticator of national import.
And you're going to love it.
Yeah.
You'll love him.